This is Practical Software, the show that seeks out strategies, methodologies, and technologies that make software engineering projects succeed.
Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of Practical Software. As always, this is Sanjeev Nambudri. Today, I have with me another fascinating guest. I have Elizabeth Ritchie with me here. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Hi. Hi, everyone.
Elizabeth has been associated with software engineering for well over two decades, and in that time has worked with companies like Digital Equipment Corp, NetManage, Authoria, and most recently with PhD Corp, where she was the Vice President of Engineering. Given her lifelong focus on building and running world-class product development organizations, we will be talking to her about what she calls the three P's of software development: people, process, and products. So, Elizabeth, let's start with what would, in your mind, be the relative importance of each of these three P's in the product development process?
Well, as you mentioned, the three P's, I found that when I join new organizations, and in the last 10 years, I've joined as a brand new vice president of engineering in a new engineering organization, I need to get my arms around the organization, and I call it my first 90 days. So I need to hit the ground running to come up to speed as quickly as possible. And what I've established over the last three companies is an approach that first assesses the people in the organization, then the process, and finally the products. And this allows me to frame my approach and not be overwhelmed by too many variables all at once.
And what would be the relative importance of these three, and you know, over the course of the product development process?
In terms of relative importance, you need to get the people right. The organization needs to be populated with the right skills and the right attitudes and fire in the belly in order to build world-class products. And secondly, the process, and finally, the products will be world-class if the people and the process are world-class.
Sure. Let's talk about the people, right? The first P in this equation. So if the goal is to build a world-class, you know, engaged, highly productive engineering team, how would you go about doing that?
So first of all, I'd like to say what the goal is. So the goal is to build a world-class, engaged, highly productive engineering team. And the first thing that I do is I talk to all the engineers to get to know them, to get the feedback on their experiences, their skills, their career goals, and then ask them about their biggest challenges personally and what they see as the biggest challenges of the organization. And I can glean a lot of information from my discussions with the individuals. First of all, I look at the balance of seniority within the organization. This will give me the level of technical leadership and experience, but also the level of more junior people bringing in new blood, because we can use more junior people to take on less demanding assignments. For example, small stories or features, defect fixing, manual testing if they're on the testing side, without complaint because they'll be learning. And it's really not good to have an organization that's too top-heavy. I also have found that, in my experience, co-ops and interns can also be a feeder into the organization. They can be given straightforward, well-defined assignments and will learn while demonstrating their potential for hire when they graduate. So it's a win-win to use co-ops and interns in an organization. Next, I usually assess from my discussions with the engineers how much time they've been in the organization. This will give me an indication of the level of familiarity with the products and the rest of the company. A lot of new hires in an organization will indicate one of two things. Either the organization is growing rapidly, or there's a high attrition rate, which would be a red flag. So that's part of my assessment of the people in the organization. I also try to glean from my discussions their level of engagement and attitudes towards their manager, their teammates, the company itself, and is there a fire in the belly? Do I detect any friction among people or teams? The other thing that I look for is how many different support or operations people do we have in terms of roles? It's not just about developers and testers. There are many other support people that are involved in building world-class products. Is there an administrator? Of course, there are build and release engineers. Who writes the installs? If the build engineers write the installs, then you will need more of them. But I have found in my experience it's better to have the developers write their own installs. Is there a requirement for writers? In my last company, we had a lot of regulatory requirements. So we had to write our own SOPs and work instructions. I also introduced the concept of an escalation manager, a point person within the organization to deal with escalations from the field. In order to avoid constant interruptions of the engineers, this escalation manager was able to run interference and keep track of what open issues there are in the field and to know the go-to people on a regular basis in order to get feedback. I also had tools developers because there's always a need for tools within an organization. I had my own IT person who handled all of the engineering-specific network, patches, VMs, etc. We also had support for over 70 languages. So I had localization people who would take screen captures for translation. The other question was about the database developers. Is there a need for a full-time engineer? Depends on where you are in the maturity of the products. Is there a need for full-time database developer because a new data model is being developed, or just a consultant to understand any issues in terms of performance or scalability or data integrity?
Sure.
Then the next thing that I assess is from the org chart or from speaking with other people in the organization, the size of the organization versus the number of active code bases. For example, in my most recent company, we had 6 active code bases that represented 6 different product streams. And there were 90 engineers. And that seemed to be about right sized, depending upon the velocity of the product development and the business needs of the organization. Most importantly for me as Vice President of Engineering is to assess my management staff, because they are my leaders and they're the ones that represent the values of the organization. And are the managers top heavy? Do they have more than 9 or 10 direct reports? If so, then there would be a need to grow more leaders. I'm also insistent on promise-based management, meeting commitments, because promises made and fulfilled build trust and credibility, not only within engineering, but within the company. The company needs to know that they can rely on the engineering organization to deliver products of high quality on time as expected. Another thing that I look at are performance management. Since one of the companies that I worked for most recently was in the talent management, performance management arena, and are performance reviews timely? We used the SMART performance objective standards: specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and timely. And these are part of the objectives that each of the members of the organization would be measured by. And also the balance of development versus SQE. This can vary depending upon the organization, the maturity of the organization, and how much needs to be tested. So in the past, I had maintained a 2-to-1 ratio, developers to SQE. But most recently, because of the requirement to test with specific hardware and transmission devices, and because there were over 70 languages, and because there was a lack of sufficient test automation, I maintained a 1-to-1 ratio. And as more test automation was built, the requirement for this large test organization declined, because a lot of the regression testing was done automatically. And then another question is whether there's a separate, quote-unquote, sustaining engineering team.
Right.
I've found from my own experience, I'm not in favor of it because I believe in the accountability for quality. And there's also the psychological factor of engineers don't like to be on a team cleaning up after others, unless it's a product that's completely in maintenance, that's purely defect fixes and not any new features. Then a team can be assigned to maintain a particular product. Last but not least, on the people side is, where are the people? Are there remote sites? I worked at U.S.-based mid-sized companies, and I had remote sites in Europe and in India. And are they employees or contractors? The balance of the domestic employees versus the remote sites. Take into consideration time zones, skill sets, and how are they used? If they're developers, do they build features or just fix defects? And if they are testers, are they manual testers or test automation engineers? So a lot of this gives me a good assessment for the people part of the three Ps.
Interesting. So that's like a complete map of every consideration that would go into analyzing and then making plans for the people at your who are a part of the team. Let's look at process. How would you look at process through a similar prism?
Okay. So on the subject of the second of the three Ps in that order, I assess the process. And again, there's a goal to implement a process that will provide products with the most valuable and highest quality in the quickest time frame. So that's kind of the elevator pitch about what is the goal of the process.
Sure.
And I've been in the industry, as you said, for several decades. And about 10 years ago, I was first introduced to agile development methodology.
Mm-hmm.
And my organization at the time started with a pilot with the Rally project management tool. And Rally was fairly new at the time as well. That pilot went well, and so we proceeded to train Scrum Masters and embrace the methodology. And after all of my previous years of waterfall development, I quickly became an advocate of Agile development for its iterative structure, the team commitments as opposed to assignments to teams, and the flexibility. There's always talk in the industry about the iron triangle of project management.
Right.
Scope, schedule, and quality. With agile development, scope becomes a dynamic variable, so teams can protect quality, build a vibrant development culture, and stay tightly coupled with the business. Certainly in terms of schedule and flexibility, in the past, I've been able to either add iterations or delete iterations that had been planned based upon the business needs and based upon requirements that may come in during the development cycle. So when I'm doing my assessment of the process, I look for the level of agile adoption and whether the agile manifesto has been understood by the organization. Are all projects run by agile, or are some of the projects, for example, the maintenance projects, use something simpler like Kanban? Are there daily stand-ups? Are the Scrum teams co-located, which gets interesting when you have remote sites? Are there trained Scrum Masters? Are there trained product owners? Is there continuous grooming of the backlog? Is story poker conducted to estimate the next iteration? I see, in my own opinion, is that the product owner is the single most critical factor for success. Who writes the stories? I found in the past that if the product owner is not available, others on the team start writing the stories. And this is not something that team likes to do, but in the absence of product managers or product owners, the stories have to get written. Are acceptance criteria in place? Is there a scrum of scrums? Is there a good Uber scrum master who looks for interdependencies and blockers across various projects? Do we have a very good definition of done? That's always a very interesting concept because many developers feel that done is when the coding's done. That, to me, that's just the beginning. There's a lot that needs to happen before a particular piece of code is considered done. Is there support from the stakeholders for the agile process? The culture of the entire company needs to be behind it.
Sure. I was actually just going to skip ahead to the third P, which is the product. We talked, I think, people, as you explained, was probably the highest priority, and the process needs to then be defined in terms of what are the objectives. Maybe if you could take a look at what is then the goal for the products and how would you integrate that with what you've examined in the people and designed in the process.
Yes. So, the finale is the products that are built. And the goal is to provide the best products that satisfy the business needs of the company as committed in the product roadmap, which is defined by the product owners and the product managers. So when I look at the products from a particular company, I certainly need to understand the business itself. And how many product streams or code bases are there? That is an indication of the breadth of responsibility for any engineering organization. So at my most recent company, we found a tremendous amount of overlap in our data capture products. The company captures data in clinical trials across mobile products, across tablets, and across the web. And there were separate code streams across each one of these data capture products that the company sold. But after investigating the code itself, we found that there was probably 80% overlap in terms of what each one of these code streams did. So the goal was to build one code base to represent all of these different products, which would be much more efficient in terms of training and support and maintenance. And so the new product was first developed as an Android iPhone interoperable product based on JavaScript, HTML5, CSS3, jQuery Mobile, and was expanded to support Android and iOS tablets, and then, of course, could be converted to be a connected-only model on the web. So what technologies are used in an organization? It's good to assess a kind of a top-down view of technologies. In a mid-sized company, it's best to be as streamlined as possible and not, of course, have a plethora of different technologies because it requires a lot of training and support. And if engineers become conversant in one particular technology, it's harder to switch, and especially if they go deep into, say, Java or .NET or some other technologies, as I mentioned, JavaScript or Ruby. So for a mid-sized company with, say, only 90 engineers, it's not as efficient to have different technologies for main technologies for the code bases. And so that's usually a red flag for me in terms of how to streamline the organization to have more depth in specific technologies. Is it a Java shop? Is it a .NET shop? Sometimes there are no choices because of acquisitions. When new acquisitions are brought into an organization, usually there are different technologies to support. And so that needs to be taken into consideration. But once the process is world-class and standardized, it's much easier to absorb a new acquisition in terms of integration. If not, then it's much harder to integrate new products, new people, and new process. It's also interesting to look at how much code reuse there is, how many common libraries are there. This should always be in the forefront of product design. Code reuse rather than building a different way of doing the same thing. And then if there is a point at which legacy products need to be modernized, it's very important to look at the ROI of replacing these products or migrating them to newer technologies, because rewrites are expensive, they take time, and they require new training on new workflow, new user interface, etc. These are the things that I look at when I assess the products in light of the people that I've already assessed and the process that I like to establish.
Extremely interesting. Elizabeth, I I think there's a book here. You can, this I'm sure that there would be a lot of software engineering leaders when they come in to take over a product development effort or to even set up a product development effort. This framework that you've just laid out could definitely, I think, help them in that task.
Well, that may be something that I should put on my to-do list to go write my book.
Sure, and I know that the people listening to this podcast should be among those who would line up to buy it. On that note, Elizabeth, let me thank you for all the information that you've given us. It's been fascinating hearing very structured but very unique point of view of how to look at the entire product development process right from the point of entry as an engineering leader. So on behalf of everybody in the TechPost Media and the TPM group, let me thank you and assure you that when you do write that book, you'll get a lot of ready readers here.
Very good. Well, thanks for the idea. And thanks for the opportunity.
Sure, our pleasure, Elizabeth. So that's it, folks. Another edition of Practical Software drawing to a close. Lovely conversation with Elizabeth Ritchie here, and we'll all look forward to that book. Until I meet you all again next time, this is Sanjeev Nambudiri signing off. Bye-bye.